The cult at Eleusis, the cult of Demeter and Kore, has its roots back in the Dark Ages, 800-900 BC. This was an extremely popular cult. It was a cult that grew out of, certainly, an appreciation of nature and an attempt to understand the cycle of nature. That's clear from the myth behind the cult. You're probably familiar with the myth. As Persephone, or Kore, as the Greeks often called her, the maiden, as she is out one day, she is seen by the god of the underworld, Hades. He falls passionately in love with her, drags her off to the underworld. While she is down there, she eats a pomegranate. In the meantime, her mother, Demeter, the earth mother, is up on the earth and goes into mourning because she can't find her daughter. Eventually, she discovers that her daughter is in the underworld. She goes down, negotiates her release, but because Kore has eaten of the fruit of the underworld, she must return every year. This is an etiological myth, that is to say, a myth to explain the causes, the origins of some aspect of nature. In this case, it is that the earth goes into mourning every year for a period of time, winter, that at the end of that time, when earth's daughter returns, it is springtime because she is happy, and there is a period of then of great happiness when the earth is fructifying, that is the summer. And then after summer, there is a period when once again the mother mourns for the daughter she is about to lose, the autumn, and then the daughter is gone. Now that's the etiological myth that is there to explain what's happening at Eleusis. But the cult is even more interesting than this. We have evidence for a great cult building called the Telesterion, which is a hall of initiation. And it appears as if those who were initiated into this cult were purified over the course of a couple of days, both by washing their bodies, probably also fasting for a period of time, and then, quite possibly, under the influence of some hallucinogen, it's been suggested that there is there's something ingested here that actually triggers off a hallucinogenic experience. Then, at the middle of the night, at the end of the festival, the initiates are brought into the Hall of Mysteries where all is dark, but at the climactic moment, light is brought in, the room fills with light, and at that moment, thousands of people in antiquity believe this, the initiates had a direct personal contact with the goddess herself. Not a metaphorical experience, but a direct religious experience. Now, for that cult to exist for hundreds of years, and to increase in popularity, as it did, became very popular in the Roman period. These, I think, attest to the fact that there were many people in antiquity who did, in fact, receive this direct apprehension of the god, which is a matter of faith, not of public performance, but of inner faith. There were other shrines throughout the Greek world that similarly offered the prospect of some direct apprehension and contact with the god. Apollo's oracle at Delphi, where the god literally infused the spirit of the priestess. We call it enthusiasm, from the Greek enthusiasmos, meaning he goes into her spirit, and she then gives an oracle speaking in the voice of the god. Zeus at Dodona, who actually spoke through the tree, the great oak tree in the middle of his sanctuary, whose leaves rustled in the wind, and this was the sound of Zeus actually speaking to people. And we know from the questions that people asked at these sanctuaries that it wasn't merely a matter of state policy as to whether or not you addressed one of these oracles. You did so even as a private individual. Should I spend $500 on my brother-in-law's harebrained scheme, or should I keep the money at home under my mattress? People sought the guidance of the gods for these basic everyday questions. At the cults of Amphiaraus and Trophonius, just outside of Athens, the same sort of direct apprehension of the gods was possible. And probably the best-known example, of course, of this direct involvement of the god comes in the cults of Asclepius, the healing god who from the late 5th century onwards becomes more and more popular in the Greek world. And we have many inscriptions, particularly from Epidaurus, which attest to the belief of many people in this god. And there must have been belief in him, otherwise the cures couldn't have worked. They were faith-healing of a particular sort. So the ancient religious system, I think, did in fact have a great deal that appealed to the religious needs of people. And in fact, the more that one looks at it, the more it seems as if some of the differences between the modern world and the ancient world are really illusory. Let me illustrate. Some years ago, I was in Athens at Easter time, and I went to a midnight service in the middle of the night when the entire church was bathed in darkness until at the climactic moment the priest came forward with a candle declaring Christos Anesti, Christ is risen, to which everyone replied Alithios Anesti, yes, he is truly risen, and we passed the flame to each other until the entire room was illuminated. That practice, and I think even the leap of faith that lies behind it, shows that the Greeks of the ancient world and people of the modern world are really religiously not that far apart at all.